The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here. I was here maybe 12 years ago. We're not quite sure. But it's great to be back. A couple things about this talk. This talk is called Our Story. When we first gave it, it was me and my daughter, Dawn. She used to travel with me to conferences, and, you know, that's some of my favorite memories were during that time. But, you know, she did what daughters do. She betrayed her father by marrying someone, right? And suddenly she had to have her own life and stuff. So now it's just me telling our story. It's odd. Sometimes I get a little emotional about this. Sometimes I don't. So bear with me if I get a little emotional. My daughter says the older I'm getting, the sappier I'm getting. She would also be rolling her eyes if she knew I was showing this picture. So I'm on the left. Look closely at the hair. This is an old picture. My lovely wife Kathleen's in the middle. And Dawn's on the right. And this was our vacation celebrating her graduation from homeschool. So she's roughly 18 in that picture. So if you want to review any of this or any of my talks that I'm giving, any of the six talks I'm giving, you can go to my website, drwild.com. If you're using that ancient device known as a computer, all you have to do is click on my name. If you're using the phone, you first have to click on menu, then my name. And then you can choose handouts, and all of the handouts for my talks are there. And if you're on Facebook, you can like me. It's the only social media I do, not because I like it, but because I refuse to do any others. All right? Okay, so the way this worked was I started working with homeschoolers before I had children of my own. My wife and I were double income, no kids, and we liked it. And we lived... She would travel one way to work, I would travel the other way to work. And we were happy like that, and it's what we thought the Lord wanted us to do while the Lord was up there laughing the whole time. So I got interested in home education, not because I had kids, but because I was a professor at Ball State University, jointly appointed in the chemistry and physics departments, and my best students were homeschool graduates. Now, I didn't know anything about homeschooling, and the first time I was introduced to this, it was a student who came to my office hours, not because he had a question on the homework or the test, because he was a straight-A student in my class, but because he had a deep philosophical question about the meaning of the Gibbs free energy equation. And I had this 45-minute discussion that professors dream of, with a kid who actually wants to learn more than what's in the book and is actually interested in something that I knew something about. So we had this wonderful discussion, and at the end I was like, well, you know, you do really good in the class, you know this stuff really well, you must have had a good chemistry course where you went to school. Where did you go to school? And he kind of looked at the floor and he said, at home. And to me, that meant he was too sick to go to school, you know. And so I said, oh, so the school had a tutor come? No, my mom taught me. And I looked right at him and I said, so she's a nuclear physicist then? And he said, no, she's never gone to college. That's what we call university. I should say university. Never gone to university. And that was my first experience with a homeschool student. So I did a little research and so forth, and I found that I had quite a few homeschool students, and they were all really head and shoulders above the rest. So I started working with homeschoolers just because I wanted to attract more to Ball State University. That was really the only reason I did it. But then they started, you know, they learned that I was a science teacher and so forth. So they wanted me first to teach a co-op, and I didn't want to do that. But I did start writing books for them. And this is, if you've ever wondered what it's like to be a professor, here is the perfect picture of being a professor. Because as a professor, I'm an expert in things I've never done, right? I teach all these things that I've never had any practical experience with at all. And that's exactly what it was here. I was going to conferences telling parents how to homeschool. I was writing curriculum for parents to homeschool, having never done any homeschooling. And I was happy with that. And so this all changes When a situation develops in our church, father goes to jail for what he's done to his daughter. The wife of the father isn't the mother. The mother has been declared unfit to be a parent for the state. So this child who was in our a congregation, who I don't even remember meeting, was suddenly faced with going to a, they call it a group home. I would have called it an orphanage, right? And, you know, my wife and I prayed about it. We didn't think that was right. So we thought we would become her guardians. Guardians are just, you know, somebody who feeds them and clothes them and makes sure they go to school and things like that, but doesn't have hardly any power at all, right? So I couldn't change what she was doing in school. I couldn't change her schools or anything like that. So we were just her guardians. But, of course, that was the Lord's foot in the door. And so in a very short time, we decided that we should adopt her. And the problem was, we presented this to her. We said, look, if we're going to adopt you, we're going to have to do what's right for you. And what's right for you is not the school you're in. What's right for you is homeschooling. She did not want to be homeschooled. She was a very social young woman. Unfortunately, in the middle of class, she was often very social. And so in the end, she thought she would never see her friends again and all of that. So she didn't want, but she did want parents and she did want us as parents. Who knows why? So in the end, she took the package deal. You know, and if you talk to her and she's honest, she'll say, I really thought they'd give up after a while. Send me back to school, but we didn't. So anyway, we adopted her at 15 and then started homeschooling her at that point. And so what I want to talk about is a little bit about what homeschooling did for her, for me, and then for us, and then also a little bit about what we did, and not necessarily to tell you how to homeschool, but to maybe give you some ideas, one or two of which you might want to use at some point along the line. All right, so if you're interested in the details about why we adopted her and all of that, Home Educating Family years ago had me write an article about it. It's now on Crosswalk. The notes has that link, but also if you just go to Google and Google Jay Weil, my little girl, you'll find it. It's the first link there. So anyway, that's a little more detail about everything that led to us adopting her, but specifically about homeschooling. So this is Dawn a little later in life now with the one thing she loves more than her husband, her little dog Smokey. So what homeschooling did for Dawn? First of all, it allowed me to fill in the holes she had in her education. She had a very rough home life. And so on good days, she learned pretty well because she is a really smart young lady. On bad days, she didn't learn anything. And the way the school is, they don't track any of that. All they look at is, did you get a D or better? And if you got a D or better, you moved on, right? So in the end, she always got D's or better, so she moved on. But there were a lot of things she just didn't know. And this led basically from every subject. You know, math, she could do certain really complicated algebraic equations, but she couldn't even add fractions, right? So she had these holes in her education. Even though there were some high-level things she could do, there were some low-level things she couldn't do. She was a really talented writer, but her grammar was truly atrocious. So in the end, what I had to do was I had to try and fill in all of those gaps. And I kind of describe educating her as educational triage. Because what I did was I found the problems and I fixed those problems. Now, the reason I could do this, my wife wasn't out of the picture, but she was the main breadwinner. As an academic, you don't make a lot of money. She was actually a research scientist, and so she made the money. So her primary focus was the breadwinning, so I was actually the one who was in charge of the homeschooling, and you'll see how that works in a little bit. But anyway, it allowed me to actually figure out what she was missing in her education and fill that in. It allowed her to learn how to research things on her own. And if you ask her, this was the main benefit homeschooling gave her. And I'll never forget this, when she went off to university, one of the classes she was in, it was a speech class. And one of the first assignments was, you had to have a speech with five documented facts in them. And those five facts, you know, had to be had to have references to back them up. And so many of her fellow students, all university students, thought that was really hard. And she was like, she called me, she said, "Dad, I was done with this in 5 minutes." Because it's really easy to document your facts, all you do, you know. And so she learned how to do that because she did a lot of learning on her own. And since at that point the internet was just starting to get a useful and popular as an educational tool, I spent a lot of time showing her how you can use the internet effectively to find good information, how to get rid of the trash and things like that. So she learned now how she can pretty much learn anything as long as she's got an internet connection. And that's allowed her to go much further in what she does these days than before, but it allowed her to just save so much time on her university studies. It gave her academic self-confidence because, you know, like I said, all they worry about is if you're getting D's. She got C's and D's, a few B's. But, you know, if that's your report card, what are you? You're dumb. That's the way you think of yourself, right? You know, you got the A students, they're the smart students. Everybody else is dumb. So she thought of herself as dumb. And she wasn't. And so in the end, and you'll see what I mean when I talk about some specifics, the fact that she could teach me about some things really helped her gain confidence on the idea, maybe I'm not that dumb, right? And so you'll see what I mean by that in a little bit. So it gave her the academic self-confidence she didn't have. She would have never graduated university had we not homeschooled her. Wouldn't have been possible. It allowed her to study scripture in a completely different way. This is a really hard thing, and I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like this. So we knew her from church, and of course your default expectation from someone that's in your church is that they know something about scripture, they know something about God, maybe they're even a Christian, you don't know, but you hope and things like that when you meet them. So many of the ways we think about God are about God, our Father. Her father was in jail for what he did to her. That's a hard thing to do, to think about God as Father when that's your father. And so the way scripture is typically presented in church to teens or even to adults didn't resonate with her. And I was just struggling with this and praying about it, and the Lord laid on my heart, you know, maybe the thing to do is to not worry so much right now about the spiritual meaning of the word. Just get her to study it academically. You know, how do we know, where do these Bible books come from? You know, how do we know Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are good gospels and the gospel of Thomas is not one? Right? That's an academic question. You know, learn a little bit about who wrote it. So we study scripture more academically. And I think that allowed her to distance herself from all this negative imagery that she had in her mind about modern concepts of God. And later on, much farther down the line, she became a Christian. This was after she was married and working for a few years. So it took her a long time to get out of the typical way we think of who God is, to get comfortable with it. And so I think studying scripture in a purely academic way for a while was very good for her. Now, for your children, that's probably not the case, but it was a way we could do it that allowed her to read scripture and learn about scripture without having a lot of baggage that she was carrying around at the time. So that's what I would say the top four things homeschooling did for Dawn. Homeschooling did a lot of things for Dawn. It actually did a lot more for me. I benefited a lot more from this homeschooling experience than my daughter did. First of all, it allowed me to see firsthand how horrible, at least in the U.S., our public education is. Like I said, before we adopted her, we couldn't change anything. And we lived outside the school district that she was going to, so that meant she couldn't be bused from our house to the school, so I had to take her every day and pick her up every day. And as a result, I got to watch her fellow students, and quite honestly, I was frightened. I was frightened to be on that high school campus. And so, you know, when we sign the adoption papers, there's a process they have to go through. You sign it, then it goes before a judge, blah, blah, blah. And when I signed the adoption, my wife and I signed the adoption paper, I asked our attorney, when can we pull her out of school? He said, oh, you can do it now because the rest is all formalities. I wrote the email that night saying that that we're done with school. So the other thing I had to do was I had to find out where she was in every class so that I would know where to pick up. Because I had this naive idea, which didn't work out at all, that I could just kind of pick up where her classes left off. Yeah, that was stupid, but it's what I thought at the time. So I went to each one of her teachers. Now, you know, the one thing I know really well, chemistry and physics, but she was only taking chemistry. She was taking chemistry. They were using a very good book. This very good book has 34 chapters in it. They were on track to finish chapter 7 by the end of the year. That's how bad it was, just from a content standpoint. So I had no idea. You know, and you as a professor, you have these students who come from public schools, and you complain about how horrible they are and how they aren't prepared and all that. This is why. I mean, I had no idea how bad things had gotten in our public school system. Also, this is the great thing. I learned about things I would have never, ever learned about. Because, you know, I know chemistry and physics real well, and I'm pretty good at math. But don't ask me, you know, where a country in the world is, I have no clue, right? And don't ask me what's important about, you know, any of 1,000 important dates, because I wouldn't know, right? But she had to learn geography. She had to learn history. She had to learn all these things. I went through, you know, 12 years of school, 4 years of university, 4 years of graduate school. I graduated with a PhD. I had never read the United States Constitution, the founding documents of my country. I had never read, and I was supposedly hyper-educated, right? Well, as part of her government class, I had to read the Constitution. Wow. It was an eye-opener. But anyway, I learned all sorts of wonderful things that, you know, as a adult, you get home from a hard day of work, your choice is to turn on the TV or read a nonfiction book. What are you going to do? Well, when you're homeschooling, you're going to read the nonfiction book. You have to. And it turns out you learn an enormous amount of wonderful stuff that you would have never learned on your own motivation. Also, it gave me a completely new perspective on what homeschooling is all about. Homeschooling my daughter changed my whole impression of homeschooling. Because of my experience with my homeschool graduates and because of all the work that I did in homeschooling, my idea about homeschooling was it's the best academic experience a child can have. And I still agree with that, but that's by far not the most important. The most important thing about homeschooling is it's the best chance you have to stay connected with your children the rest of your life. That's what homeschooling is really about. And I didn't understand that until I started homeschooling her, right? And that's what homeschooling did for us. This is actually my favorite picture of us. This is in Cape Town, South Africa. We were working with South African homeschoolers, and they took this picture of us in Cape Town. This was right before she got married, so, you know, it's right before she betrays me. But it's my favorite picture of her. First of all, it taught us how to forgive and forget, because we were totally novice parents, right? And, you know, you learn a lot of parenting, let's face it, by trial and error, right? And, you know, when they're young enough, hopefully they don't remember a lot of the errors. When you get them at 15, they remember all the errors, right? And you've got to be honest. I had to be honest with her so many times. Yeah, I really messed up. And of course, she messed up a lot, and I had to get her to be honest with me. And you couldn't just hold on to grudges. You just couldn't. So you have to forgive and forget. When she got engaged, we took her and her husband, her fiance, on a vacation, and as is typical, they had a little spat, you know. And so they kind of went their separate ways. Well, she finds me, and we talk about it and all that. And they get together by the end of the night. Everything's forgiven and so forth. And her husband said, you know, you and your dad, you always seem to find each other when you need each other. How is that? How are you? Is it you're so close? Because, you know, you didn't spend much time with him. Because only a few years. She said, yeah, but we fought all the time. And, you know, if you're going to live with a person you fight with, you got to learn to forgive, you know. And this made it very, very easy for us to form this really, really tight bond. And we learned things about each other we would have never learned any other way. Of course, you may not have any context for this, but if I think about my time in school and the kinds of things my parents and I talked about at the dinner table. How was school today? Fine. What'd you learn? Nothing. You know, and that's about it, right? But, you know, when you actually have to evaluate your daughter and you have to talk to your daughter about, you know, why did you think this is really neat how you interpreted this story to be that, to mean that, that it allows you to get an insight into your daughter that you don't have any other way. And, you know, and I even learned probably political things about her political beliefs and a lot of her social beliefs that I probably would have never learned if I hadn't been homeschooling her, you know. And, of course, she learned a lot of stuff I didn't know. And there were a couple of times she said, wow, you never learned this in all of your education? No, never did. So, and it formed your bond that is absolutely, truly amazing. This just happened right before I came to this conference. She and her husband, you'll learn what they do in a little bit. As a part of their job, they actually witnessed something really traumatic. And her husband, you know, after they talked about it, her husband got on the phone to one of his best friends. But you know who she called? She called me. Can't tell you what that means. You know, to be able to, I'm the first person to think about when, you know, when she experiences something like that. That's the kind of bond we have. And we wouldn't have had it if I had sent her to school every day. No way. Absolutely no way. And it taught us an enormous amount about having grace with each other and having grace with the world and everything else. So it taught us an enormous amount about grace. All right, to kind of give you an idea of how schooling went for us, if nothing else, this may not be a blueprint for you, but it should at least give you a little permission that you can go far, far, far outside what we normally think of as school when you're homeschooling. Because I was still a professor while I homeschooled her. However, because I had pretty good student evaluations, I was kind of able to dictate my schedule. And I would, you know, my department head would say, here are the classes you're going to be teaching. And I would say, well, here are the times I want them at. And he would agree to that. So basically, I scheduled all my classes in the very late morning and afternoon so I could spend mornings with my daughter. So here's a typical day. Wake up at 6:30. Now, I would never tell her this the night before. But if I thought she had done particularly well on some of the assignments the day before, I would let her sleep in. But I wouldn't tell her, because you know what kids do if they know they get to sleep in an hour. They just stay up an extra hour, right? So that doesn't do anything. So I just, you know, I'd wake her up at 7:30 or 8 o'clock sometimes, and I'd say, I let you sleep in because you did such a good job yesterday, right? Just so that she knew. All right, but within an hour of when I woke her up, she had to be at the desk in the den, ready to go. All right? We would start every day with math. That's the one subject she couldn't teach herself. She was fairly good at it, but she wasn't intuitive at all. And so I would do a math lesson with her, show her how to do whatever problems, explain to her what we were doing and so forth. Then I'd give her some problems she had to do throughout the day or a test she had to take or something like that. And then I would give her assignments for the rest of the day, and you'll see what these assignments look like in a little bit. And so then her job was simply to have those assignments done by the time I got home. But I honestly didn't care when she did it. And in the next one of the other talks I'm going to do, I think it's tomorrow, I learned quite a bit later that as soon as I left the house, she'd go back to bed. And she'd take a nap before she even started school, and that allowed her to focus better. And I was all for that, you know, as long as she was doing well in her assignments and so forth, all right? So then I'd leave for work, and she knew that by the time I got back, she had to have her assignments ready so I could grade them again, and then we'd start the whole process over the next day, all right? And of course, you know, you wouldn't do this if you had a six-year-old, but because she was a teenager, she could be left alone reasonably for a few hours without too much worry. So that's how a typical day went. And in this typical day, here are the kind of things we would do. So for example, when we did English, I had a book called Barron's ACT Review. If you're not familiar, there are two standardized tests called the SAT and the ACT. A lot of Canadian universities will accept those instead of provincial exams, or at least as part of what you can do instead of provincial exams. It's what we do in the US because our school transcripts mean nothing. So since our school transcripts mean nothing, basically every university, few of them got lax on this, but most universities want to see either an SAT or an ACT score to see whether you know anything or not. So there, of course, are people who make their money selling you review books to help you do well on the SAT or ACT. And one of the things these review books have is just a huge number of vocabulary words you're supposed to do. Now, whether or not you take the SAT or ACT, these are all good words to know. So I would choose the next 10 in the list, you know, and I would copy them, I would scan them on the computer, give them to her, and tell her she had to have a definition for each one of these, and she had to use each one of these in three different sentences by the end of the week. And so every week she knew those new vocabulary words, at least for a little while anyway. She was a very good writer. Like I said, her grammar was atrocious, but I kept correcting that. And this is something that I do to this day, and she hates it. But if she is talking to me and she uses incorrect grammar, I will just reflexively correct it. You know, she hates it to this day, but I still do it. But anyway, so she was a great writer. And so as she wrote, I would keep correcting her grammar, and she got better and better at her grammar. But because she was a great writer, I tried to use writing as a way to make her at least a little more interested in what she was doing. So most of the evaluations I did for most of the other subjects was writing. So for example, she had a history report that she had to do for me. Then the grammar and composition would compose her English grade, but the content would make her history grade. And so that way she didn't do a lot of actual English work except writing about all the other subjects. Now she did do the vocabulary, and the other thing she did do was she had to read certain books. I don't know anything about literature. I only know the stuff I like, right? So I went to a university's website that said, here are the great books that all students should read. I gave her a list of those books, 30 of those books, and she had to choose four every year. And she would read them, and I would read them, and we would talk about them. Then she would also get to choose one book of her own that was not on the list, and I would read that with her as well. We wouldn't read it together. We'd read it separately and talk about it and so forth. So it was a very unstructured way of doing English, but I think it worked really well because it helped her learn to use her skill as writer, but to do a little better with the mechanics and so forth. For math, like I said, I had to teach her herself, so I just used my old books. I was one of the few students, because, you know, I know it's kind of hard to believe, but I was kind of a nerd. You know, I know, hard to believe. So I kept all of my books. So I had all of my books. So I use my own books for that. But if I think about what's out there now, if you don't have a problem with video as your main teaching tool, I think Video Text Interactive is a fantastic math a series. Saxon is good for a lot of people. Math UC I like a little better. I think it has the strengths of Saxon without some of the weaknesses. Singapore is probably the most rigorous math you can do, but it takes a lot of your time. The Bob Jones series is really rigorous, but you've got to know somebody who knows the math, especially as they get older. Teaching textbooks is a good alternative for people who don't know a lot of math. It's not quite as rigorous as Saxon or Matthew Sear video text, but it's still a really good choice. But I didn't use any of those. I'm just looking at them now and thinking about what I think looks good. You know, for science, believe it or not, I had her use my stuff. Because remember, I was writing the science stuff before we adopted her. and she didn't like it because God's got a sense of humor. But she was actually able to do very well with it. She just didn't care to. But nevertheless, she did a good job with it. We did do health, and this was something I did specifically to tackle something that was very difficult. So in my mind, health, any kind of health thing you cover in high school isn't really a science course. Because, you know, we can make some very basic statements about health. You know, you should eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, you should exercise a lot, and that's about all we can say. Everything else is speculation, essentially. So I had her work on healthy living, what kind of diet works, you know, you think you could live with that would still meet certain goals and so forth. But the main thing we did here was I used this as how to talk to her about sex. You know, because you got to, and it was uncomfortable since I barely knew her. But, you know, she's got to learn both the morality and the mechanics or it doesn't work, right? And so you've got to do that somehow. And so it was like, okay, I don't want to do this, you don't want to do this, but we have to because it's school. And that seemed to be a good way to fix that. So her health class was main. Her health class was one big excuse to have the talk stretched out over time. this was my favorite thing we did. For history and U.S. government. So I didn't know hardly anything about history, right? But here I am, I'm supposed to teach my daughter history. And so I was like, how am I going to do this? I went to my dad's attic, and he had this World Book Encyclopedia set that he bought for us when we were kids. And I looked through the front of the encyclopedia, and it had this wonderful timeline. And had a timeline for world events, and had a timeline for U.S. events. And I didn't know much about history, but I figured if it's in these encyclopedias, most of that stuff's probably got to be pretty important, right? So I typed all of these events into the word processor, and then I hit randomize. And so I gave her a jumbled up list of major events that happened in the world, major events that happened in the U.S., and her first job was simply put these in chronological order. You know, and you can use any resource. She used the internet because it's easy. And so took a few tries to get it right. Of course, I only knew the answer because I had the timeline, right? So we got it all fixed. And once we got it fixed, once it all was in order, then we would step through these timelines. And if she knew what the event was and could explain to me the basics of it, we would move on. If she didn't know, and I happened to know, which was almost never, I would write out a few questions that she had to find the answers to. What normally happened is if she didn't know, I didn't know. And the one I remember most clearly is we got into the world events, we got to Magna Carta. And I said, I don't even know what those two words mean. And she said, it's some document, but that's all I know. It was some really important document. And so her job was to write an essay teaching me what the Magna Carta was. And that's what we did with everything that she didn't know and I didn't know. Her job was to write an essay to explain to me what this was. And of course, as a kid, very first time I said, you're going to have to do this, her question was, how long does it have to be? And I said, long enough to teach me what's the important stuff, right? And that took a little while to get it all, but she was able to do it. So she would write this essay. I have no idea whether it's right or wrong, right? So I read this essay, and I read it assuming I'm reading it from a book, taking everything to be true. And so I read it, and then I utilize a very little-known fact of the world. A little known fact of the world is fact-checking is much easier than learning. So once I was reading, I would underline certain things that I thought were important, and then I would go to my DVD, Grolier's Multimedia Encyclopedia, and I would type those little details in there, and I would check and see if she was right. So she was my main history teacher. All I did was fact-check her. And this was a wonderful experience because she, honestly, she realized she was teaching me things I didn't know. I still have her essay on the Magna Carta because I thought it was brilliant, first of all. And here's this document, in case you were as poorly educated as me. The first document that took power away from the monarchy and gave it to the people. You know, democracy wouldn't exist without something like the Magna Carta. It was a beautiful essay she wrote about it, and I was like, here's something my daughter has given me, an important part of history that I had never learned, that my daughter has given me, and that, you know, I was able to check a couple of her facts and so forth, but that's what for me homeschooling was. She got to educate me on historical events, on U.S. events, things like that. Really wonderful. It was a way I got educated through my daughter. And for her, she saw herself educating someone who had a PhD. That's pretty cool, right? So that was our favorite thing. The thing that got her into the university of her choice was this. For U.S. government, I really didn't know what to do. My parents are big in local politics. We personally know the former vice president and things like that. So we're a pretty political family. And I didn't want to do politics. I wanted to do government. And that's obviously something very different. So I thought, you know, I don't know what the U.S. Constitution says. So I got out a copy of the U.S. Constitution, actually pulled it up on the internet, and I looked at it and I said, you know, the language is a little dated. So what I had Dawn do was I had her take the U.S. Constitution and update it into modern English without losing any, without changing any meaning or anything, just write it in your own words. And obviously this was done over a long period. I'd give her a section here to do and a section there to do. And so in the end, we had this complete, and I still have it on my computer, this complete U.S. Constitution in Dawn's words. And I thought that was pretty cool. I learned a lot. There is actually a place in the U.S. Constitution where it says, even if there's nothing to do, Congress should meet once a year. That's actually in the U.S. Constitution. I couldn't believe it. So anyway, excuse me, when it came time for her to apply to universities, one thing a lot of universities in the U.S. do is they'll do a portfolio review. You give them a portfolio of your best work, and they'll look at it. So, you know, I put together this portfolio of what I thought was her best work, and two or three pages of that Constitution were in there, the first two or three. And the admissions officer looked at that and said, oh, you know, she looked at the three pages and she says, oh, it's a shame she didn't finish it. I said, oh, she finished it. I just wanted to put a little bit in there. She said, can you email me the rest? And so I got home and I emailed her the rest of the document. She sent me an email back a couple days later. She says, I've shown this to every admissions officer in this department. No one's ever seen anything this original before. Just the idea that you'll take something and update it into your own words without changing any meaning to learn from it. And so to this day, I think her test scores were right at the minimum for getting into this university. But I think that's what put her over the top, was that her admissions officer really liked that. All right, and I liked it too, because like I said, I learned more about U.S. government, I think, that year than any year of my life. For geography and world events at this time, the world was changing a lot. I didn't really want to use a textbook. This was the thing of all the things she says she hated the most of homeschooling. By Friday of every week, she had to have found an article in the newspaper. She couldn't do this online, and that's why she hated it. the newspaper that got delivered to her house every day, by Friday of every week, she had to have an article from the newspaper about a country or a region of the world that we had not talked about before. She had to give me an oral presentation on why it was in the news, what was important, and then where it is on the world map and so forth. She was thrilled when she would find it on Monday and Tuesday. She hated it when she wouldn't read the Saturday or Sunday paper, but she'd keep it. And so by Wednesday, by Thursday, if she hadn't found anything, she'd look at the Saturday through Sunday papers too, trying to find something. But it was sort of a shotgun approach to geography, but I learned a lot about where things were, and it was concentrated more on, you know, what was important going on right then and there. So I thought that was pretty good. Foreign language, that's an important thing, but it's hard to do. I took German at university. My PhD advisor was German, and we talked German a lot. He loved my phraseology. He just laughed and laughed at the way I phrased things in German. But I wasn't going to be able to really be a teacher for her for German. So we actually went to a local university on this one. She took French at a local university. We also sent her to that same local university because she was thinking initially to be a psychologist. So we sent her there for psychology as well. And, you know, if you have the chance to do like an online college or a local college or something like that, that can be good for one or two classes because it can really help strengthen the student's transcript. So, you know, when we applied to university, she had a transcript with some of her old high school grades in it, grades given from me, but then grades given from a couple of other university professors as well, and that helped a lot. If you're looking at what's available today and you haven't seen Rosetta Stone, that's worth looking at. It's basically a computer program where you see four pictures and the native speaker is describing these pictures and you have to choose which one he or she's talking about. And so over time, you learn the language through pictures more than anything else. That's an interesting way to learn it. Okay. Like I said, in a lot of Canadian universities, they will accept these ACT or SAT tests as part of what you can do instead of a provincial exam. For the U.S., it's an important part of university admissions. So we started that basically the day we started homeschooling. We started this. So, for example, the SAT-1 is the SAT that everyone would take if you take the SAT. It covers only math and English, right? But the math starts with arithmetic, all right? But it's always the section everybody does the worst in. So it's arithmetic, algebra, and geometry, and everybody does the worst in the arithmetic section. Why? Because it's story problems. And nobody likes story problems. So, you know, she was already supposed to know arithmetic. This is how I learned that she couldn't add fractions. We did some SAT review arithmetic problems, and it became really clear she didn't know how to add fractions. So this was good for me filling in her gaps. But it's just a really good review of the math you're supposed to know anyway. And if you end up taking one of these tests, it helps a lot. Once again, there are books out there. Barron's is a good program. REA also is a good program. Both of them have it. If you have a young lady, and so my daughter did not take the SAT, a young lady should take the ACT. Women score better on it every year. Why? Who knows? But every year, the average woman's score on the ACT is higher than the average man's score, and for the SAT, it's reversed. Young men should take the SAT, young women should take the ACT. It also includes science reasoning, not scientific facts, but science reasoning. So once again, we did review really for the ACT, and that helped me fill in a lot of her holes. But it's a good way for a homeschooler to get ready to go on to university. This helped with math. This helped fill in things. So it was a really good thing. Like, for example, if you're doing a math curriculum that has cumulative review problems, so sometimes there's a section, it's not every chapter or every section of the chapter, but there'll be a cumulative review, and it's actually reviewing math that you did 3 years ago. That's good to do, but don't do those problems. Do them out of the ACT review book. still cumulative review, but now it's cumulative review focused on this test that you might end up taking. So I think that's a good way to deal with that. All right, so that's a little bit about what we did in homeschool. It's not something you have to do. I don't think it's necessarily works for everyone, but hopefully you see it wasn't really traditional. One of the things that I find most intriguing about homeschoolers is we leave the school because we know the school isn't working, and then our first reflex is to replicate the school at home. We're going to replicate that thing that isn't working. That's silly. You need to do something that works for your child, and what works for your child is different from what worked for my child. And what worked for your first child will be different than what worked for your second child. If you've ever heard the name Diana Waring, she has a wonderful history program. Her first child was the typical bookworm. When she started homeschooling him, she'd give him a book, he'd read it. She'd give him some stuff to memorize, he'd memorize it. And she was like, this homeschooling stuff's a piece of cake. Her second boy, nothing like that. All he wanted to do was move around and fix things and so forth. And so she says, she remembers this quite clearly. She gives the multiplication tables to her second son. And her second son just can't remember the multiplication tables. And one day she's watching him trying to memorize these multiplication tables. And she sees him just doing this. And she finally says, you want to get up and move, don't you? And he says, yeah. And so they do jumping jacks to memorize tables. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 3 is 6. And that's how they memorize the multiplication tables. For her first kid thought that was stupid. But it's the way her second kid did it, right? So that's what we're doing. We are trying to give our child a tailored education to him or her. So don't replicate what's at home. Figure out what works for each individual child, right? So what's happened since homeschool? Okay, so she went on to Butler University and got a degree in sociology. Now let me say, first of all, I did not want her to go to university. The university professor, did not want her to go to university. The reason is there are far too many students who go to university who shouldn't be there. And not only are they wasting their time and your money, they're distracting the kids who really should be there. So, you know, when I teach freshman chemistry, don't do it very often, when I teach freshman chemistry at Anderson University, maybe 60 students, maybe 20 of them should be there. The others have no business being there. There are two reasons you go to university, and only two. One is if you're just a natural scholar. If your idea of fun is to try and come up with a new hypothesis of why this team won this war, that's scholar. That's someplace you should go to university. The only other reason to go to university is if you have a career path in mind that requires a degree. If you don't fit one of those two categories, don't go to university. You don't belong there. Go out into the real world for a while. You know, you're not going to find yourself at university. There's only one place in the world that's more artificial than university, and that's jail. And you're not going to find yourself in jail. You're not going to find yourself at university. You're going to find yourself in the real world interacting with real people. And you'll figure out what the Lord wants you to do. So anyway, I did not want her to go to university because she fit neither of those categories. She's smart, but she's definitely not a scholar, and she didn't have a career path in mind, right? However, my wife is much wiser than me, and one day she sat me down. She said, you really don't know why she wants to go to university, do you? I said, no, doesn't make any sense. And she said, because she'd be the only person in her entire biological line to have ever gone to university. That's why she wants to go, to separate herself. I was like, okay, well, that's a reasonable goal, I guess. And that's a reasonable motivation. So she went to university really to separate herself from her biological heritage, which I can appreciate. She got a degree in sociology. You'll see how well she's using that in just a moment.
She worked initially for the publishing company that I used to own, and she would travel around with me when I did conferences and things like that. She then became a veterinary technician. She does love animals. So she wasn't a vet. She was the kind of person who would do procedures and so forth, but she couldn't diagnose or anything like that. Then she got married, still a low point in my life. And she and her husband are a long-haul trucking team. So that's how she uses her sociology degree. So the picture there shows her two favorite loves in order. The dog's in front, the husband's in back. That's the order. And that he's not standing on anything. She's, I think, 4'7", and he's 6'8". So, excuse me. It is a really interesting business they're in. They own their own truck, so they're what's called owner-operators, but they have all sorts of security clearance, so they mostly do military loads and classified project loads and things like that. But nevertheless, they work towards that. For a long time, they just hauled normal stuff until they got to the point where they could specialize and so forth. So she's not using her sociology degree at all, but she's very happy, and that's the main thing. She's very happy. What actually ended up turning her to Christ was she could spend a lot of time on the road, and of course he would be sleeping for, you know, a lot of that time, because, you know, you sleep when the other one's driving. And so she had a lot of time to think, and she asked me to send her books on tape and podcasts. So, of course, I sent her stuff I thought could work in terms of learning more about the forgiveness of Christ and all of that. And the podcast that meant the most to her, there's a podcast called Unbelievable. She really loved that. It's a Christian podcast. But anyway, so that's that time on the road and listening to positive things about Christ and so forth is really what helped her find salvation, which I think is wonderful. But of course, the most important thing to remember about her, the most important thing to always remember about her, is she is my little girl. She's 45 years old now, which is why my hair is white. but she's still my little girl. And as I said to begin with, we wouldn't have anything close to the relationship we have now if we hadn't homeschooled. Because in the end, it's not just about quality time. It's about quantity time, you know, and when you spend so much time with your children learning the ins and outs of how to solve this equation, you know, or what really happened on the beach at Normandy, when you spend time learning that, you spend time growing together, and that ends up making a permanent bond. Now, you know, I don't want to give you this idea that there's some magic recipe to having a great relationship with your adult children. There isn't. But I can tell you there are ways to hedge your bets. And in a racing arena, we should be talking about that, right? Ways to hedge our kids. Is it this used for horse racing? Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. But there are ways to hedge your bets. And one way to hedge your bet is to have a lot of positive time. You know, and homeschooling can produce an enormous amount of positive time together. And, you know, when Dawn started with us, she didn't like school. She didn't think there was anything useful to school. By the time she finished with us, she wanted to go to university specifically to separate her from her past, because now she suddenly thought there was something useful about school. And the reason I honestly think she thought it was useful, school was useful, is because I sacrificed a lot of time in order to teach her the stuff that I could have just sent her to school to teach her, right? But I sacrificed my own time for that, and that made her realize, at least to me, how important education is. So, now, I know keynotes don't normally do this, but I've got another 10 minutes, right? Who's in charge here? I got another 10 minutes, right? I'll take that, okay, good. So, any questions? Anybody want, and it doesn't have to be on this, anything you think somebody who's a scientist and knows homeschooling and stuff? I'm not going to make this uncomfortable. I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to sing seven verses of Just As I Am to get a hand. But any questions out there that I can answer? Everybody's going up to do their hair. Oh, there's one, yes. Go ahead. Did I what? Boy, obviously I'm not supposed to get off the stage. The question has, did I actually build something with my kids? For science, we did experiments together, but we didn't build anything. But one of her favorite things we did, she was studying the pyramids, and she decided she wanted to make a model of one of the pyramids. So we did make a model of a pyramid together. And of course, because I wanted to be, to make it look cool, you know, it was kind of, you know, one of these things that you saw two sides of the outside, and then the other two sides were off so you could see inside. And on the inside, I took these things from a little train set. They were just street lights, but I kind of flared them to make them look like torches. And I had a little battery that I hooked them to, so when we turned on the switch, the inside of the pyramid would light up with all these little torches, and you could see the hieroglyphics on the inside. So we did that, but no, we didn't actually build any things for science. Did a lot of experiments, though. Anything else? Yes, sir. Would I describe what I was doing as unschooling? No, because I had things I wanted to accomplish in every subject. I understand why you're saying that. So if you're not familiar with unschooling, unschooling is popular in certain corners of the U.S., and I think it can be done well if it's done right. Unschooling is where you kind of let your kids decide what they're going to learn. So, you know, you don't just let them play video games all day, but they have chores they do, they have things around. And when they ask, you know, how is it I do this? Or can I go to the store with you to learn about money and things like that? Then you just wait on them. And you let them direct you into learning. And of course, with unschooling, you don't use very many textbooks or anything because you're not following a plan. The difference between unschooling and what I was doing was I wasn't waiting on her. I really did have an agenda for everything, so I was just trying to adjust that agenda to fit her specific learning styles. Yeah. What did it look like studying the Bible academically? So, rather than you know, using a commentary or something like that, we actually used I wouldn't call them theological textbook. We actually use the kind of textbooks that a secular school would use in studying scripture, right? And, you know, a lot of the things in these secular textbooks, you're not going to agree with them. And I guess it's worth saying in a couple of different ways. So I didn't agree with everything that was in these secular textbooks. Like, you know, for example, the one we read about for the Old Testament, he didn't think the Pentateuch was written by Moses. He thought there were six or seven different, you know, sources that were all cobbled together. And you know, my point to her was, there's no way I can say this absolutely isn't true. And there are some reasons he has. Now, here are some reasons I think it might not be true. But because we're talking about ancient history, we really don't know. And so I think exposing a teen to opposing points of view is always a good thing. So we would read these secular books on scripture, and we would read read portions of scripture every day. We had, you know, readings we had to do every day, but we weren't looking for the spiritual truths in them. We were looking for, you know, in the Old Testament, what was happening to the Jews at this time, what's Ezekiel saying supposed to happen to the city of Tyre. We were just looking for the factual stuff that was going on at the time. And I guess I would expand this a little bit. When we did biology, obviously we were using my stuff, so it's creationist, but we also read Richard Dawkins' The Blind Watchmaker, which is, and the subtitle is something like, Why Biology Reveals a Universe Without Design, or something like that. So in the end, it's a very strong polemic for evolution. And I thought it was important for her to realize that I'm willing to consider other views. right? And I think that was important. Her first university biology course was titled Dinosaur Evolution. And every week or so, she'd call me and talk about what was going on in class and what I thought about it. And I honestly think if I hadn't read The Blind Watchmaker with her, I'm not sure she would have thought to call me about that kind of stuff. Because I'm not sure she would have thought he's willing to, you know, engage in other points of view. So, anything else? Yes, sir. Yeah, I can't code to you, so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with Khan Academy, yes. Yeah, so Khan Academy is a wonderful resource. I don't know a lot about what you do for elementary. What I think Khan Academy is best at is explaining things that you don't understand in your curriculum. I know they've set it up as a curriculum, but when I look at their algebra and the way they want you to do their algebra as a curriculum, I kind of find it's kind of haphazard. And so I'm not sure. I mean, if they've been doing it through elementary school, maybe it will make more sense to them when they get to the high school level stuff, that the way Khan Academy is doing it as a curriculum works. What I recommend people with do with Khan Academy is, rather than going straight to their website, in Google, just type something like adding fractions and then finish Khan Academy. And what you'll do is you'll find the Khan video on adding fractions. So I find it a really useful help. I've never found it useful as a curriculum, but I think if, like I said, if they've been doing it all along and doing well on it, they may have a better idea of how to use it as a curriculum than I would. But for everyone, no matter what curriculum you're using, if you don't understand something that's in your curriculum, you know, type some description of that problem and then finish it with Khan, K-A-H-N, Academy. And you'll find the Khan Academy of video on it, and some of them are incredible. If you want to know why we invert and multiply to divide fractions, Google divide fractions Khan Academy. You'll find out why we invert and multiply. So, anything else? Yes, sir. Technology. Well, you know, I taught her how to use the internet for research. That was technology at that time period, because we're talking about the 90s, right? So at that time period, that was the big technology stuff. But nowadays, I think it's important, it's still important to try and figure out how to use the internet to find good information. But I think there's a lot of stuff in technology you can incorporate these days. She didn't take any like video conference classes or anything like that. We just didn't do anything like that. But I think that wasn't very practical back then. It's pretty practical now, you know. And especially, once again, if you're thinking about strengthening your high schooler's transcript, if you can find some, you know, other company or college or whatever that does offer a couple of video or online courses that's graded by someone else, that can be a big benefit to your child's transcript. Oh, gosh, good question. If I could go back, is there anything I'd change that? Absolutely. When my daughter was 19 years old, we were driving down one of the main streets in Anderson, and we passed by this little local dairy called Bestway. And I told Dawn, you ever been in that dairy? She said, no. I said, it's kind of interesting. You know, they show you how they do the milk and everything and so forth. And so I said, do you want to? She was like, yeah. So I called and I said, do you guys still give tours? I remember when I was a kid, you'd give tours. Yeah, we still give tours. What's your school? That's not school. It's just me and my daughter. Oh, great. How old is she? 19. Okay. So me and my 19-year-old daughter toured the dairy. Yeah, what I would do different is a lot more of those field trips. You know, less book learning and more going places where useful things are actually happening. You know, I'd do a lot more of that. That's the one thing I think I really messed up on. I was so worried about filling in all the books. All right, now I am out of time, so sorry. Thank you very much for your kind attention.